the truth. Thank you for what you mean to our lives, how you've provided. And Father, now we agree and declare that you're here now again to give us what we need so that we can get through the day, the week, and the rest of the time until you return. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. Exodus 15:20. Tonight's message is going to be two women and about women. Do I hear a collective sigh of relief out there amongst the men? You ought to know better than that by now. Exodus 15:20. And Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. Miriam, if you remember, means bitter rebellion, or rebelliously rebellious, and bitterly bitter. Disobedient, hard to deal with, obstinate, rude, obnoxious, crude, and rude. Dude. Now, who is it that follows rebellion, rudeness, crudeness, and bitterness? All the women. Now, in order for us to understand, and you'll see as we read through this, that up to this point, Moses had his problems out in the wilderness, but they were not of the nature that are going to start right after this. Miriam, bitterness, rebellion, gets together now, and when a person is rebellious, when a person is bitter, they call the woman out of themselves. See, this woman isn't a term that means gender. This has nothing to do with a sex or gender. You will find that this has to do with a condition. This word woman here isn't from the English, it's from the Hebrew. And basically it means the condition of a human being, a particular condition of a human being. Because the word woman means not only woman, but a mortal. Hence a man. And some will say, well, how could that be? How could it be? Well, if you take the first part in the English of the word woman, the first part refers to the womb, and the second part, men or man, comes from the fact that she is part of the human race. It's not the human race and the human race, it's the human race. So in this particular case, this word woman means a person who is frail, who actually is melancholy, frail, feeble, desperate, woeful, sick, and incurable. Seven conditions. So you see, the minute you become obstinate, rebellious, because of your bitterness, the only thing you can defend yourself with, the only thing that comes to your defense, is the condition sequentially of melancholy, being frail, feeble, desperate, woeful, sick, incurable. And that's what leads to the main problems that the nation of Israel had in the wilderness. Now for you ladies, I would say, if you're desperate and wicked and rebellious and all of that, then listen to this melancholy, frail, feeble, desperate individual, because that's who you're living with. That's you. If, however, you are rebelliously rebellious and bitterly bitter, this is what you're going to draw out of your husband. This is what you're going to attract out of him, or boyfriend, or whatever. This is what you're going to attract out of him, out of your children, because that's what you attract out of yourself. The first condition to change yourself from what God wanted you to be to what bitter rebellion wants to be is you become melancholy. The word melancholy comes from the phrase that, or the condition of black bile. And black bile is considered to be one of the four humors of the human body and to be the direct cause of gloominess, irritability, and depression. In other words, it's too much black bile. Now, the way you secrete or secrete too much black bile is you get yourself in a mental, spiritual, or emotional condition. And then all of a sudden you cause a chemical imbalance in yourself. And when you do that, the black bile spills over into your system and causes gloominess, irritability, and depression. So the first thing that has to happen is you have to become melancholy. You have to actually get yourself through a physical act of secreting black bile. You get yourself in a depressed condition. Now understand this, depression doesn't make you sick. Sickness makes you depressed. It's not the other way around. Now the minute you finish being melancholy, you secrete this black bile, then you become frail. Frail means easily broken, easily shattered, easily damaged, easily destroyed, easily tempted to do wrong, morally weak. Understand what I'm trying to tell you here. You're trying to deal with a mental condition where you feel like you're so wrong spiritually because you have this desire to do wrong. And you really would like to stop doing that, but you say, boy, I'm such a bad person. I'm telling you that you cannot help yourself once you become frail. See, the enemy doesn't attack you until you become frail. And he can't make you frail until you get melancholy. So actually, he has to use your body to get you in the condition so that you can be easily broken. Now, easily broken also means easily maddened, easily angered. See, depending on your personality, some people are quick to cry, but others are quick to cuss and quick to anger and quick to hit and spit and slobber. But you see, that's all a sign of feebleness. That's not strength. That's feebleness. Your temperament has been broken. You've lost your ability to rationally think. And whether it's out of anger or hurt feelings, it doesn't matter. It's frailty. Frail also means to be delicate. You know, maybe like when mom wanted you to be so delicate. Isn't it strange that fathers just love it when their kids go out and smash all the other kids in sight? And the ladies do just the opposite. Well, husbands and wives, the truth is somewhere in the middle. The problem again is here is that you're frail, easily broken, easily shattered, easily damaged, so much so that even a child can get you upset. Now understand this, you got to be ashamed of yourself. God has put you in charge of a family, or if you're a wife, in charge of the children, and you let the children make you mad. That's about as frail as you can get. Because of the melancholy, because you're rebellious, that's why. And you're bitter. Taking it out on the children, by the way. Now, from frailty, melancholy, frail, you become feeble. Feeble comes from an old archaic word, which means to be wept over. In other words, you like to be wept over. And if it has to be you doing the weeping over you, it doesn't matter. You like to make people cry. Husbands are particularly bad at this. You get some kind of gleeful internal joy out of your wife crying. Maybe it's the feeling of thinking I'm powerful and I can make her cry. No, she's feeble, that's all. That's all, she's just feeble. She's rebellious, melancholy, frail, and now she's feeble. Well, why is she like that? Well, why do you think she married you? What do you think it was about you that attracted her? You think it was your physique? No, it wasn't even your physic. You got to understand, these are conditions. Like spirits attract like people. Let me tell you something. The worst time you can make a decision is when your circumstances are not good. The worst time you can make a decision is when you're desperate or when you feel unfulfilled. The worst time you can make a decision is when you're hungry, in other words. Amen. Anybody will tell you, do not go shopping to the grocery store when you're hungry. You'll have to buy a semi to bring it home. But see, we don't make those kinds of decisions rationally. We go out shopping for husbands and wives and you name it at our worst times. That's why I say, why don't you turn to God? Let your conditions and your circumstances become as best as they can be under the circumstances, and then you'll be able to see a lot more clearly, and you won't go shopping at Vons when you're desperate. And then you'll only buy and accept whatever you actually need. So here we have a problem where the individual is now feeble. Now, the minute you resort to crying and say, some men will say, well, I never cry. Oh, yes, you do. You cry more than your wife. Because cry also means to try to make your point by loud voices. When you cry out to someone, it's because you don't think they're going to hear you any other way. Men are the biggest crybabies of all. They're always raising their voice, trying to make a point. The minute I hear that, I see a feeble individual who's frail, easily broken, easily tempted to do wrong, and is trying to take out their frustrations on me. It is not my fault you're easily tempted to do wrong. But I'm also here to tell you it isn't yours either. The problem is you made the mistake of getting melancholy. You actually put a chemical into your system that causes you to react a certain way, and then you turn around and take the blame for it or try to give it to me. You have no more control over how your body reacts to black bile than you have control over how your body reacts to alcohol. Now, you do have control whether the alcohol gets into your body. You do have control whether the black bile gets into your body. But having made the decision to ingest the alcohol or the black bile, you're out of it, friend. You don't have any more say in the matter because now you're melancholy. Literally, you've become drunk on your own juices. And then you become feeble, crying or making people cry. And feeble also means without force or effectiveness. Notice here, we're going to start be drifting towards trying to get another chemical to undo what the original chemical did. Now, that's all that doctors do. You make yourself sick with one chemical and you go over there and they try to give you another one and make you worse in the long run, but you do feel better temporarily. It's sad how we ignore God when all he wants to do is make us better. It is sad that you will go and pay good money for an idiot in a white coat to tell you to continue to do what you've already been doing, counteracting one chemical, one drug with another one. And you'll pay for that. And I'm here to tell you how to get out of that free, and you snub your nose at it. Melancholy, frail, feeble, without force or effectiveness. Driven, feeble means driven from loss of hope. In other words, the minute you start losing hope, the minute you think I'm too weak, I'm not effective, I can't help it, I'm too frail, and it's all because of melancholy, now you start being driven from loss of hope. Now, anything that drives you is addictive. Anything that gives you a driving desire that makes you do something. You see, I think you can understand this. If you are driving, that is a big difference from being driven. Now, when you drive, ooh, wow, thank you, man, I'm getting effective here. That's better than that. I saw some of you jump up out there. Night, night. Are you smart enough to know this? When you have that round thing in your hands in the car, you are driving. Which means you get to decide where you go. That little round thing in your hands means you're driving. If you're sitting on the other side or in the back, and you don't have a little round thing in your hands, you are driven. Which means you go wherever the car goes, wherever the driver takes you, unless you're stupid enough to jump out. But the point that I'm trying to make is when you're driven, you have no control. So anytime you tell me I couldn't help it, you're obviously driven. And you are driven from loss of hope. Now, feeble means to become without force or effectiveness. Now, desperate is the next word, and this is all part of woman now. Desperate means driven from loss of hope. In other words, first you become without force or effectiveness. Things don't work for you. And it isn't because you're bad, it's because you're frail. You're easily broken, you're emotional now. And that isn't the problem either. The problem is you got melancholy and you have an overabundance of black bile. If I could tell you, all you had to do was stop drinking a particular fluid and all of your trouble, you could drink everything else but that and your troubles would stop, you'd be a damn fool if you wouldn't stop drinking that. And I'm telling you, all you have to do is stop drinking black bile. And all of these problems would cease of their own accord. In other words, Satan has not one lick of power in your body. Not one. All he knows is chemically how you work. He knows exactly how you function. He knows exactly how to make you go wrong. Well, if he knows how to make you go wrong, then God must know how to keep you right. Now, once you become feeble, you become desperate. And desperate means driven from loss of hope, to become rash or violent. Desperate means having a very great desire and a very great unfulfilled need. Can you see how hunger's starting to creep in here? See, Satan is preparing you. At the end of this, he's going to give you a chemical to try to circumvent or to counteract the original chemical that got you in the problem in the first place, your black bile. But now you're desperate. You have a very great desire, a very great need, a hunger. And understand this, it isn't a hunger for something that you need. It's a hunger to counteract the black bile, which made you melancholy, frail, and feeble. And now you're desperate. See what a web this is, this diabolical Satan weaves? Has nothing to do with hunger for food. Has nothing to do with the need for cigarettes or alcohol or food or fat or sugar. Has nothing to do with that. It's the chemicals in it that we're talking about. And even those chemicals don't have any power unless you make the mistake of putting black bile into your system. That's what gives you a very great desire and need. For what? Hunger? A particular thing? No, black bile puts you down. Now that causes your body to have a great desire and a great need for something to put you up, something to lift you up, some quick fix. Are you starting to see now where the problem is? I wish doctors would go to school and learn this. I wish they'd get out of those doctor places and come to church here and they could learn this and they could heal people all over this country. There'd be no Betty Fords or Shirley Chevys out there that had to do anything. I mean, Jesus would take care of it. But then we say, oh, isn't that awful that people won't do that? Really? You've been here how many years? And you're still fighting it. You're drunk on black bile. Desperately drunkard that you are. Now from desperate, from having a great desire and a great need, unfulfilled, you become woeful. Woeful means full of great sorrow, grief, and misery. From there, it goes to sick. Now it starts to become actually physical. Sick means troubled and grieved, which is first sick of the mind. Then it means suffering from illness. So you see, the sickness came. Your body actually made you sick. That's understandable. It has the same effect on me. That's not the problem, though. Now that you're sick, you know what the next part of the definition of the word woman? Incurable. Incurable means something that cannot be corrected, therefore cannot be remedied. And let me tell you something, there's a humongous amount of incurable people in this room. You cannot be remedied because you refuse to be corrected. Your stupid pride will not allow you to be corrected. That's what makes you incurable. Incurable means something that cannot be corrected, therefore cannot be remedied. Don't you understand that in God's law, in His universe, with His creation, remedy cannot come before correction? And all I've tried to do ever since I've met you is try to correct you. And all you've done ever since you've met me is fight against correction while you're pleading for the remedy. God, that's stupid. And I'm not upset. I'm not doing the black bile bit. I'm just saying, what's it going to take? I get so upset that these stupid demon spirits with no power continually have you in their clutches, and you give them authority and you give them glory and you give them honor by saying repeatedly, God can't do it and the word doesn't work and they're more powerful and you're a bigger liar than they are. The fact of the matter is you're incurable because you refuse to be corrected. And you cannot be remedied until you're corrected. Well, why don't people want to be corrected? Corrected or correct means to point out the errors or faults of someone. Change the wrong to right. You have a wrong answer, I slash it out and give you the right answer. No, here's what you do. You have a wrong answer, I slash it out, give you the right answer, and you say, no, that's wrong too, and then you come up with another wrong answer. And of course, you have more wrong answers than you've got time. So every time I prove to you that your answer is wrong, you just come up with another wrong answer. You refuse to let me point out the errors or your faults in order to change them from wrong to right. The only concession that you're willing to make is to change one wrong for another one. So because there is no correction, there is no remedy. And remedy, understand this, remedy means something that corrects, which I just told you, counteracts, neutralizes, and then removes evil or wrong. But notice in the definition of the word remedy, correction comes first. You first have to correct, point out what's wrong, counteract it. What does a doctor do? The first thing they do is they examine you to see what's wrong. The minute they realize what's wrong, then they try to stabilize you or counteract that's wrong. Once they have you stabilized, then they try to remove from your system whatever it is that's causing the problem. That's remedy. It's amazing that you don't jump up out of the doctor's table there and try to tell him, no, don't do that. I know how to do this. You do to me. Yeah. Remedy also means any medicine or treatment that cures, heals, or relieves a disease or bodily disorder. So understand this. The bodily disorder, the disease, is to have a hunger, a need, a desperate need for correction, to counteract a condition of your body caused by melancholy. Now that's what Miriam affected in these people. And everybody that had this problem followed her. And the definition for all those people is woman or women. Now understand, now let's look and see what the condition immediately changed. There were a lot of problems out in the wilderness, but this hadn't to be one of them until Miriam did this. Now go to Exodus 15:24, and immediately the effects of this desperate longing to find something to make yourself feel better because of the melancholy. See, they were out there in the wilderness and they were afraid. They weren't trusting. They didn't trust Moses. They didn't trust God. They didn't trust anybody. They were depressed. They were melancholy. They were drunk on their own juices. They got desperate. Now they have a hungering and a desire and they don't know what to do about it. Look what happens in 15:24. And the people murmured against Moses saying, "What shall we drink?" Like, that's going to help? You see, immediately the body tries to find something to make it feel better. Now, they didn't want water. There was plenty of water. You know what they wanted, and so do I. Go to verse, see, now I'm going to share with you now how all of the problems now from here until the end is over hunger and thirst, trying to correct a problem with a chemical to counteract a problem that a chemical started to begin with. Exodus 16:2. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And now in Exodus 16:2, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron and in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt." Like they drug us out kicking and screaming. Moses said, "If you don't want to die, put some blood on the lintels and the doorposts. And if you want to come, let's go." And he said, "Oh, would to God we had died there." I didn't see any of them staying there. See, they're trying to find some way to counteract this melancholy. And they'll lie about it, just like you do. "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full." See, when they wanted drink, God gave them water. They got water. He even brought it out of a rock, just to show, "I bring water out of anything." Oh, there's one excuse out the window. Yeah. This dude can even bring water out of a rock. We got to come up with something else. Says, "Well, gosh, remember when we were in Egypt, when we got to eat all the bread we wanted? For you have brought us forth into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Moses, you brought us out here just to kill us. Reuben, all you're trying to do is kill us. You're taking away or trying to take away the things that are killing us. So that means you're trying to kill us. I never went to your house to try to take the bread out of your house." He says, "When we did eat bread to the full, for you have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Now God said, look, see, God is so merciful and so wonderful, and how he backs his man. Verse 4. "Then said unto the Lord unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you." Not for these lily-livered, yellow-bellied, sap-sucking individuals. Not for them. He said, "I'm going to do it for you, Moses. I'm going to shut their mouths, and I'm going to rain wonder bread all over their heads." He said, "We're going to shut them up. I'm going to prove to them." See, here's the problem with these people. They have the problem. They also know the answer, don't they?
Yeah.
Water would fix us. Something to drink would fix us. Bread would fix us. See, there's the problem with you. You know the problem, and you think you also know the answer. So God says, "Well, we'll prove to them that they don't know what they're talking. I'll rain bread all over their heads. And the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them. I'll test you to see if all it's going to take is bread for you to be obedient, whether they will walk in my law or no." Did it work? No, they got bread manna till it was coming out of their ears. Well, now they come up with a new complaint. Verse 8. And Moses said of chapter 16, and Moses said, "This shall be when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full." In other words, he says, "I'm going to rain bread from heaven on you. But you're not just going to have to eat just bread and water." He said, "In the morning, in the evening, you're going to have flesh to eat, and in the morning, bread to the full, until you can't handle anymore. For that the Lord heareth your murmuring, which ye murmur against him." And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. So you see, God is saying, look, I'm going to give you bread, but I'm also going to give you flesh to eat. Flesh in the evening, bread in the morning. Guess what? They're going to want bread all meal. They're going to want flesh every meal now. Watch. Verse 12, "I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, speaking to them, saying, At even ye shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God." In other words, God said, look, I'm not only going to give you the bread you're complaining about, but I'm going to see to it that every evening you get flesh, and every morning you get all the bread you can eat. All the bread you can eat. You would think that would have solved the problem. Well, see, bread didn't cause the problem. and bread's not going to solve the problem. But it also makes the statement that the people, all 4 or 5 million of them, collectively could not come up with the right answer. Now, you've tried and you're still trying. You really think you know what the answer is. When I counsel with people, they tell me what the problem is, and then they tell me it's because I don't have this, because I don't have that, because she did this, didn't do this. They always have the answer, always. And I say, if you already have the question and you already have the answer, what the hell am I doing here? Well, you want someone to argue with, obviously. You want someone to agree with you and validate your stupidity. And that's not my bag. That's not what I'm here for. Let's go on with this now and see. You say, well, now everything's peaches and cream. Why, these guys are getting 3 squares. Hey, they eat meat at night, flesh at night, and bread, all the bread they can handle, and they can store it up so they can have a Subway whenever they want. They can have toast. They can have whatever. They got goats all over the place. They can have a patty melt, whatever they want. Cheese, anything they want.
That's right.
Now, you would think that would solve the problem now. Well, I haven't seen that. When all of you came in here, none of you were making the amount of money that you're making now. And all of you said, when you have a bigger apartment, when you have a nicer car, you're making more money. When you're married, then you'll be a good guy. And you still stink. Verse 17:13. And the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst? Now see, the first accusation was, you brought us out here to kill us. Now he says, you brought us out here to kill us, our children, and our cattle. Well, Pharaoh was doing a very good job of that. He didn't need Moses' help. So now they're complaining again. Now it's water again. Notice, when it was water, God provided the water. Then they said, no, it's bread. And then now God provides bread and flesh, and they say, no, that wasn't it. It was water all along. Well, you see, here we are, back and forth, just like you do. Numbers 11:4. This gets better. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Once a day isn't enough. But look what happens here. Mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. In other words, someone that didn't belong, in all this roaming that they did, they start intermarrying and bringing in people that had a different opinion, people that were against whatever the beliefs were there. So now we have a mixed multitude, which causes what? Lusting, desire, strong need. That's why I tell you, don't mix the multitude. Don't put things into your system. They're going to cause you to lust. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? It's almost like they get amnesia, like they're flat drunk. They've been eating flesh every single day, every evening, all the bread they can handle every morning, and what do they say? Who's going to give us flesh to eat? What do they think they were eating? It doesn't matter. You see, just like you, it's always a different excuse, because you're always seeking for an answer, something else to counteract the black bile. Notice, God gave them bread. He gave them water. He's going to give them, in fact, later on, they're going to get drunk when Moses is up on the mountain. They're going to get flat drunk and dance, and that still isn't going to help the black bile. What I'm telling you is, nothing counteracts black bile but peace of mind and getting back to a steady, unemotional disposition. But they're going to try. 11:4. Who's going to give us flesh to eat? Verse 10. Then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent. And the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. Notice about these sap-sucking, yellow-bellied sapsuckers. He said Moses heard the people weep throughout their families. It wasn't them coming and saying, Moses, what are you doing? They got tough with their families. And their families were the ones that were heard. He heard it through the families. And then later on, every man in the door of his tent. In other words, they never complained to Moses face to face. They never came to church to say it. They come here to listen to the message and then go home and say, what the hell does he think he knows? I don't understand where he got that. You went home to cry, didn't you? Just like they do. Every man in the door of his tent. Now notice what the response of that is. Now God never said, you believe everything Reuben tells you. He says, but you prove me face to face. Come, let us reason together. Don't go home and complain. Don't go home and pollute your family with your garbage, with your black bile. But that's what these men did. They went home and in their families complained, in their tent. For the first time now, we have this response from God. The anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. See, I tell you these things not because you damage me. I'm telling you this because you're damaging yourself. And you're not doing your black bile any good, by the way. Numbers 11:18. God's angered and Moses is displeased. God heard him. And say thou unto the people, this is God speaking to Moses, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow. See, God's upset now. He's angry. He said, you done talked against my servant in a backhanded way, and you polluted my families. You polluted your families. You didn't handle it one-on-one, man-to-man. You went home and polluted your families. This is God's response. And say thou unto the people, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and ye shall eat flesh. You see, that sounds like, oh, you're going to get your way now. You shall eat flesh. Let's not read it. Sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and you shall eat flesh. Let's read it this way. Sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and ye shall eat flesh. Watch. For ye have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. We were happier before we were saved. We were happier before we were rescued. We were happier before all this garbage that we have to put up with now. Someone else leading us. Someone else feeding us. Someone else taking care of us. We were better off in the hellhole of Egypt. God doesn't take to that very well at all. Therefore the Lord will give you flesh, and ye shall eat. You shall not eat one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, neither 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month until it come out of your nose. And it be loathsome unto you. Now let's read it this way. Whatever it is, this flesh, whatever it is that you say you can't be happy until you have it, God says, I'm going to give it to you now. Not 10 days, not 2 days, not 5 days, not 10 days, not 20 days, but a whole cycle. In other words, for a whole month, until it come out of your nostrils and it be loathsome unto you. Now, isn't that what happens? You drink, 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 until the cycle is complete and you say, God, I got to stop this. Never again. My head's killing me. And then you start the cycle all over again. He said, you're not going to do it for a few days. You mess with me. You do it your way, and I'm going to put you on the cycle. And every month, just like a woman, you're going to have your cycle. When it becomes low, your own habits, what you said you wanted, what you said you couldn't be happy without, God's going to give it to you till it comes out your nose, until it becomes loathsome to you, until you're spitting up your guts, throwing up, slobbering all over, and everybody then says, oh, there's never again, that's it for me. No, it isn't. Never has been in the past, and it isn't now. Don't lie. The fact of the matter is, you're on a cycle. The fact of the matter is, you keep telling God that's what you need to make yourself happy because you're trying to take one chemical to counteract another one. Black bile. There's no way to counteract it. Let it run its course, get it out of your system, and don't secrete it again. Don't get melancholy again. But you think you know better, and now you're on a cycle. And this thing, whatever it is, you're going to eat it every day until it comes out at your nostrils. And it be loathsome unto you, because that you have despised the Lord, which is among you. Now, who is the Lord that was among them? Moses. He was the authority. Because you've despised the authority that's among you. Your wives despise the authority that's among them. Your children despise the authority that's among them. And you get upset when your children don't obey. You get upset when your wife doesn't obey the authority. You get upset when your child doesn't obey the authority. But you don't give a damn when you don't obey the authority. And therein lies the problem. So now you're going to have it a whole month. Not 2 days, not five, not 10 days, not 20, but a whole cycle. Until it come out your nostrils and it be loathsome unto you. Now think of all the habits, everything you've ever tried. You come from the point that you got to have it. Then you get full of it. You drink it, eat it, snort it until you just can't handle anymore. And then it makes you actually sick to your stomach. And you swear off. And then you start again all over again. 40 years these people did this until they died. And you think time is on your side? What got them out of this physical death? Are you going to opt for the same thing? He says, you're going to have it until it comes out your nostrils and it be loathsome unto you because that you have despised the Lord which is among you and have wept before him saying, why came we forth out of Egypt? In other words, what he's saying, I am not going to accept that you think you were better off in Egypt with just a little bit. I'm going to give it to you now till it's coming out your nostrils and you're going to be totally addicted to it, if for no other reason to prove to you that that's not where your happiness lies. All over flesh. All over something to eat in a desperate attempt to counteract the black bile. Now, when God says he's going to provide something, he provides something. When he says he's going to open up the windows of heaven, he opens them up. Amen. Ain't nothing shorthanded about God, believe me. Let me see how he provides. Let's see how he solves this baloney problem they had. He said, we want more baloney. Numbers 11:31. And there went forth a wind from the Lord and brought quails from the sea and let them fall by the camp as it were a day's journey on this side and as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, and as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. That's a lot of quail. Now, let me tell you how this works. I don't know how big the camp was, but there were several millions of people. Let's just say the camp was 100 miles square. And to put several million people in that is a task, but let's just say that's the case. He said, there's going to be quail from the border of the camp, a day's journey this side, a day's journey that side, a day's journey this side, and a day's journey this side. Now, let's say, for example, that a day's journey, a day, the definition of a day here is 12 hours, sunset, or sunrise to sunset. So this means basically the amount of distance that a person could cover in 12 hours. Now, a marathon runner can cover 26 point some miles in 2 hours and something. But you're not marathon runners and neither were they. Let's just take our time. And we'll just walk at about 5 miles an hour for 12 hours. That's just very conservative. You will cover 60 miles. 60 miles this way, 60 miles that way, 60 miles that way, and 60 miles that way. Plus whatever the breadth of the border is together. It might be 100-mile borders. We don't know. But let's say 60 miles each way. Now, in that 60 miles, 2 cubits of quail stacked up high. Now, a cubit is from the tip of the middle finger to the elbow. About 22 inches. 2 cubits would be 44 inches of quail. In other words, they were up to their armpits in quail. Up to their armpits in quail. 60 miles that way, 60 miles, and that is if they all had arthritis and that's the best they could walk. I'll tell you the truth, it was probably closer to 100 miles. But I'm being conservative here. 60 miles, 44 inches high. On all directions. You would think at that point, after they did that, they would say, well, I guess meat wasn't the answer. But they didn't. They still did not want to admit that that wasn't the problem. Numbers 11:33. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, they never thanked God for it. They never changed their attitude. They just got more quail. They got more blessings, just like you do. And then they just look for something else to bitch about. Up to their armpits in quails and still complaining, just like you. So now they're consuming the quail, didn't bother to thank God, didn't bother to change their attitude, didn't bother to thank the Lord or to change their disposition toward Moses. All they did is they start munching. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, they hadn't even swallowed it yet. Ere it was chewed, they hadn't even chewed it yet. They just whomped their choppers on it. The wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord smote the people with a very great plague. I guess we shouldn't be eating that stuff, should we? And certainly not if you think you can't be happy without it. Oh, I can't do without that. I just got my disposition. I just get so horrible. I just can't do without it. Well, I didn't see you exactly being Tinkerbell when you do eat it. I don't see that it makes a damn bit of difference either way, except that it causes a very great plague. And they called, verse 34, and he called the name of that place Kibroth Hatava, because there they buried the people that lusted. Kibroth Hatava, graves of the longing. What was their problem? He said, I have to bury what's wrong with you. And what was their problem? What was the real difficulty? Longing. Longing for what? Something to counteract the melancholy. Something to counteract the black bile. Something to make them feel better. There's nothing wrong with that. I've told you 1,000 times. Wanting to feel better is natural, it's proper, and God wants you to feel better. Here is the difficulty. You make yourself feel bad chemically by becoming emotional, doubtful, lustful, and all those other things. Then when you get melancholy, then you have a desire, a longing for something to... So he said, what I have to do is I have to take these people to Kibroth Hatava, a grave of the longing. The word longing means a strong desire and a yearning. But it comes from the word long. Longing comes from the word long. Did you all know that, by the way? Maybe you did know that, but I'll tell you, you didn't know this. There's two words long in the dictionary. Long number one and long number two. Well, longing comes, or Kibroth Hatava comes from longing, which comes from long number two. And long number two means to wish earnestly. Well, what's wrong with wishing, brother? That's why we wish upon a star. We wish and I wish this and I wish that. Let me tell you, you're going to learn now the difference between praying and wishing. And if you have an ounce of shred of brain in that thing you call a head, you will never, ever wish again. Wish means to strive for and desire what you crave. In other words, God said He would give you all the things that you need. He said He would provide all of your needs according to His wishes and glory. According to your... Help me. I provide all your needs according to your... His riches and glory by Christ Jesus. I don't know why I got wishes in there. I'm speaking against wishes. So now He said, I'm going to provide everything you need. Now notice how your body works. The things you really need, you never crave. Have you ever craved lettuce and tomatoes? Have you ever craved anything? No, we crave the things that are bad for us. And why do we crave those things? Because God said, that's not good. I'm not going to give it to you. So you have to wish for it. It means what you strive for and desire because you crave it. In other words, it means you literally have to go after your cravings. Literally, you have to strive for them. Wish also means to request or order something. So when you wish for something, you're requesting it with the implication of an order. So see, there's a difference between a prayer and a wish. When you pray, you said, Lord, help me, provide my needs. That leaves it up to the Lord. When you wish, you say, Lord, I need this, and I want this, and I want that, and I'm not going to be happy, and I'm not going to do right until I get it. And he says, I'm going to put you in it up to your armpits and show you you don't know what you're talking about. I don't know how many people I've known in the ministry that I've talked to, including the ones in this room. You've received up to your armpits everything you said you needed to be a different individual, and you haven't changed yet. Just remember how you were before you came in here. What you told God, and he puts you in it up to your armpits. And you're still the same person. You still have the same longings. You still have the same wishes. Wish finally means a request with the force of an order. Now let me tell you something. You don't order God. So when you wish, in fact, I'm going to back off of that statement. The last thing in the world you want to do is order God. I'll tell you why. Because God said, I will provide for you according to your words. Be it unto you according to your faith. By your words you shall be justified. Ask and you shall receive. He didn't say ask something good. He didn't say ask something wonderful. He just said ask. So whatever you ask for becomes an order. God said, I will give you what you ask for. Don't you see the importance now of not approaching God with the problem already analyzed and the answer already for him? Because then he's not God. You are. You are the individual with the problem. You're the doctor. You're the God. And you're everything in between. So as a result, when I or anyone like me tries to take my position in your life, you won't allow it. Because you want to be everything and everybody. You want to be everything in your life. And now you're wishing for this and wishing for that. And I'll tell you why you can't pray for it and believe it, because you're wishing for it. That's why. And I'll tell you why you're wishing for it, because you're really wishing for something you crave. See, God says, look, I would give you the money that you need if money wasn't an opium for you. If being successful wasn't a drug to you, I'd give it to you. But the minute you get successful, your mind goes cuckoo. You think you know everything. You draw away from me. You leave me. You change toward me. And I've put you in money up to your armpits, and it just makes you worse toward me. But then God is God, and his word is his word. And you come back and you say, this time I'm going to do it. And if God, and he does it again, and God is my witness, you do it again. And the Lord said, look, how long will I strive with this stiff-necked people whose cravings are the only thing that matters to them? And I'm trying to tell you here, do not get upset because you crave, because you have a desire for some wrong, whether it's a moral wrong, a spiritual wrong, a physical wrong, a medical wrong. Don't kill yourself about that. Don't get down about that. That is not the problem, and you can't help that, by the way. I'm trying to give you some relief. Don't try to solve it at the craving part. When you have this craving for something you know is wrong, you know it's morally wrong, you know it's hurting you, it's hurting your children, it's hurting your wife, it hurts everyone around you. You know it's wrong. But then you deal with the fact that it's a craving and it's too strong. I understand it's too strong. I understand it, and not only that, but it doesn't relieve the problem anyway. I'm saying back off of that. I'm not critical about that. I don't care about that in the primary. That's a secondary concern. My primary concern is let's back off. Let's wipe the slate clean. Let's confess. Wipe the slate clean. And no more emotionalism. No more anger. No more thinking you know better, which then means no more melancholy. No more melancholy means no more black bile. No more black bile means no strong craving or urge to counteract the melancholy. No more urge. Now, if you don't have an urge or a craving to smoke, drink, eat wrong, then you won't smoke or eat wrong or drink. It's just that simple. I'm trying to tell you there's a simple, absolutely foolproof way. And God made it foolproof for a very good reason. It's for fools. And not only that, so no one will have an excuse. See, if it wasn't foolproof, then the fools in this room would say, well, it was beyond me. So even a fool. So even if you want to cop out and say, well, I just don't understand it, it's foolproof. Can you see now how your own body is your worst enemy or your best ally? And can you see how now how your body, after years of struggling, this battle going on between your mind and your appetites, your cravings, and this going back and forth from black bile and melancholy to have a desire to do something to make you feel better, this war back and forth finally wears down one or the other. Notice how it always happens. Some people go cuckoo in the head. Just cuckoo completely. And the body takes over. I mean, it just runs wild. They can't do anything. They can't go to the bathroom. They need help for that. They can't do anything for themselves. The body is totally in control. The mind is just out of it. In other cases, most cases, 99% of the cases, is what happens to you all. Your mind is in total control. You think you know everything. However, your mind is not connected to your body, according to you, so your mind spends all its life making excuses for what your body does. A total disconnection. You even disassociate yourself from it and talk about it like if it's somebody else. Well, one day you'll be laying on a hospital bed and it will be somebody else. And you won't be able to control it. And they're going to have to put machines on it to help you. And then your prayer is going to come true. Because you've said all along, I can't help it. I have no control over it. One day you'll be laying in a hospital bed and you won't help it and you won't have any control over it. And someone else is going to come and shoot you full of drugs to try to make you feel better until you kick the bucket. And that is sad. Especially when we have all this knowledge. Especially when it's so unnecessary. Especially when you stop to consider is you poisoned yourself. And it's all this frailty, this woman attitude, this desire to be wept over, this desire to cause weeping and to be wept over. This is the desire that comes out when, Miriam, when you become rebelliously rebellious, when you say to me and to the Lord, I don't want to do it that way, I'm going to do it this way. That's rebellion. And then you don't do it the way you said you were going to do it either. That's rebelliously rebellious. That's Miriam. The next thing that's going to happen is melancholy. You're going to become a woman. And let me leave you with this final anecdote. There is no family on the face of this earth. Let me put it to you this way. What's the expression about having two women in the same house? Huh? Have you ever heard that expression? Like, that's out and out war?
Yeah.
To have a mother-in-law, to have your mother and your wife in the same house, doing the dishes together and trying, her mother and your wife? Would you like to live that? Come on, guys, be honest. Would you like to have your wife's mother living with you? Would you like to have your mother living with you? So in other words, two women in the same house is war. I rest my case. Every time there's a disagreement that is not reconcilable by the truth, and you have to revert to your stupidity and your customs and your traditions, the problem is two women in the house. Two women called out by Miriam. And then when I come along and tell you how simple this is, and what a difficulty you're having, You refuse to believe me. Yet let me tell you something. We have people sitting in this room, and we have for a long time, Deanna, who studied for years, and she's still amazed at what she didn't know about psychology. She has a medical doctor, good friend of hers, who has one or two tapes. One tape?
Five or six
by now. And she just listens to them over and over. The last time she saw her, she said, I'm still listening to those tapes. A medical doctor can't find fault. In fact, finds revelation, finds knowledge and wisdom in the tapes of yours truly. Thank God. And then when one of our little children went to the same doctor over a bee sting, guess what she was saying to him? Things she heard on the tape. A medical doctor went to a doctor place, been practicing medicine all the time, and says, this man knows what he's talking about. I'll incorporate that into my practice. And you, Joe Dimwit, after all these years, you still don't put any credence in what I say. Something's desperately wrong with your melancholy, baby. Hey, I made a song there. Melancholy. Honest to God, I didn't intend that, but that's good. Melancholy baby. That's what I'm going to call this. Be my melancholy baby. There we go. That's the way we're going to do this from now. I'm not mad at you. You want to get upset and get drunk on your own juices? Go ahead. Doesn't matter to me. Drink all of them if you want. There's a disgusting thought if I ever heard one. Have you ever noticed how something goes, and then they swallow it? Where does it go? Now, I've seen some that open the window and they break the windshield on the car coming the other way. I've seen that happen. But notice, have you ever noticed when you all get sick and you walk around? Do you have any idea where that's going? You're swallowing it. What if I came to you with a whole glass full and say, here, and I put even a straw in it, would you go? You say, no, that's disgusting. Then why is it? See, you love your own juices. You love this melancholy. You love to poison yourself. You walk around and you're swallowing your own stuff. It's garbage. It's poison. And then this is the individual says, oh, no, I can't eat that. I says, that salad, that just doesn't have any flavor. I'd rather have smuts. See, I don't have a lot of faith in your gourmet tastes. You're not exactly what I call a connoisseur. You drink black bile. You eat snots periodically and without fail. And then you're going to tell me that you know more about diet than I do? You're going to tell me your tastes are too sensitive after I see what you eat and drink? You see, what I'm trying to express to you is your body has no more knowledge about what tastes good and what is good than the man in the moon. And yet you will trust your body to tell you what's good. And that same body says, you trust it, well then have some snots. Let's catch a cold now. Let's drink as much of it as we can. And you do. And then you turn around and say, okay, Bob, what's on the menu here? And he looks at the menu and says, well, we really prefer some snots, but there's no snot burgers on here or anything like that. So it picks the worst. But that's the body that you trust. That's exactly the one you trust. That's the same body that when you put garbage into your system and you eat wrong, it spills out into your bloodstream, feeds all your tissue, you eat like a pig, and then you wonder why you're sick. Then you wonder why you make the decisions that you make. You wonder why you get so depressed. You wonder why you have the cravings that you do. Melancholy. Drunk on black bile. It'll give you a craving for anything that stimulates anything. And based on your personality, where you grew up and how you grew up, that stimulant, that will dictate what the stimulant is. With some of you, you love to fight, you love to argue, anything that causes tension, raising of temperament, that's your black bile. That's how you do your black bile. With others, it's depression over what you don't have. With others, it's depression about what you'd like to have. It just doesn't matter. When it's all said and done, you all drink from the same cup. black bile. Once you do that, you can't stop it at the other end. I'm trying to tell you there's a simple way to do this. Sunday, we're going to go through with this a little bit more. You're going to see, we're not done yet. These people go from the sublime to the ridiculous. And you're going to look and say, how could anybody be so dumb? They're drunk. See, that's the same thing I say about you. How could you be so dumb to make the same mistake again? Well, now I've learned you're not dumb. You're drunk. I have compassion for you now. And now I'm starting a new group. PAD. Not MAD. PAD. Pastors Against Drunks. Don't do that anymore. You're only hurting yourself. And I think what's really sad is when I look at your children, I look at your poor little children, and the first thing, you tell them anything at all they don't like, and they'll just break down into melancholy. They'll just break down and take a big glass of black bile, because that's, they're learning their diet from you. And all I'm trying to do is help you. I don't understand why you count me your enemy. I don't understand that. But if you must murmur, let's reason together. You murmur and I'll reason. Don't go to your tent to do it, bozo. Do it here. Good message. I liked it. You didn't. Too bad. Come back next week. You're going to get the same again. Until you get it. Got it? Brother Rick, would you close the service in prayer?